I want to talk a little bit about some of the theme of what's been coming up. Some of you might realize that this is a week of just sort of this discussion about opening up. I don't know about your, some of you have talked about it already. This seems to be a week of people thinking about leaving the safety of our own home for. It's for many of us thinking about that. And actually this week someone told me that she is returning to work after being furloughed. She's returning to work in a hospital and being very anxious about it. And I personally had been asked by four different administrators in my university to assess whether I feel safe to return to work in August. So I have to think like 3 months from now how I feel. Like, so, and of course you hear a lot of discussion about whether we should open up and not open up, and also along the way hearing discussion of fear, right? Or thinking like I want to wait until it's absolutely safe, until I know that there's no danger before I feel really comfortable to go out, to go back to work, to venture out of my own home. So this idea of absolute safety that we are looking for. And it's interesting, yesterday someone shared this article, or actually a chapter in a book by Pema Chodron that I'd like to share a few sentences with you. Let me read some of these sentences that she wrote. To seek for some lasting security is futile. One has to give up hope that this way of thinking will bring us satisfaction. Suffering begins to dissolve when we can question the belief or the hope that there's anywhere to hide. So I want to talk about these few lines, and perhaps some of these words resonated with you. The desire to find some safe place to hide. What these words were pointing to was the our entrenched habit of looking for lasting security, and this habit of believing that we can find some absolute safety if we work hard enough. If we work hard enough, we can find it. It's just that because I haven't worked hard enough, or like the world hasn't worked hard enough, we haven't found that absolute safety. So we really believe that this habit, this habitual thinking, and we believe this way of thinking, this searching for absolute safety, is what will bring satisfaction, happiness, satisfaction. When the reality is that this way of thinking, this entrenched habit of believing that well, all we need to do is to search for and find absolute safety is suffering. Suffering. That's what she's talking about. That's why she's saying that when we stop doing that, suffering dissolves. But of course, you're not going to just do that because it's an entrenched habit. You really, really believe that this is the way to do it. Really believe that if I try hard enough, I can find some safe abode, some place, some way of living that is secure, that's safe. So what we can do is to use the practice of cultivating clear awareness that we've been practicing, like in our meditation, to become more aware of this very entrenched habit, this habitual way of thinking. Because it's so habitual, it's invisible to us. We just think like this and feel and believe this. So let me share some possible examples of thinking and believing this way. And some of that may resonate with you, and you may discover some other examples. Some of you may have encountered this during the past couple months. This belief that all I need to do is to control everyone's action around me, because you want safety. I want everyone in my life to be safe. I don't want anyone I love to get sick and die from this. So what do? Control what they do. Don't let them go out. Don't let them see their friend. Don't let them do anything. And because we believe this is how I keep everyone safe, you believe that's because you love them so much. I don't know how many of you had tried that, or someone tried to do it to you, and how that had worked out. I had personally seen that turn into some very serious conflicts in their family. That someone telling their elderly parents not to go outside of the home at all, in a state where there wasn't a stay-at-home order. So it's okay actually for them to go out and take a walk with safe distance with their friends, but their children from other state told them, "You're wrong, you shouldn't do that, you should try to stay inside." And what's this advice for? Is it for our feeling, our need to feel safe, our need to know that other people in our life is safe, regardless the cost to them, regardless of what it is that they actually want? Or is it for them? So when our urge to find absolute safety, we may be forgetting that each person has their own risk tolerance, and I can say their own cost-benefit calculation, depending on their own causes and conditions. So for example, this elderly parent was like, and I actually could see that. So I'm in my 70s, you know, I don't have that many good years left. Like, this is a beautiful spring and I'm gonna go out and enjoy it, because I don't know how many more years I can go out and see blooming trees. Who can blame her? Who can blame her? Or there's we have friends who had a teenager who went out to meet up with his friend, and they got in a big fight over it because of the belief that we need to find absolute safety. And he has own reason. This is his last, he has his last couple years of being in with home with his high school friends. And you feel that, like, you know, I may not be able to do these things with my friends very long, and want to enjoy it. So I use this example to illustrate how our urge to search for absolute safety, not only does it cause conflict, it makes us incapable of empathizing with how other people experience and see their situation. We are blind to other people's point of view because we are so desperate to do everything to control the situation in search of absolute safety, which of course doesn't exist. Another example, another way that this might show up, again, is to cultivate this awareness of this kind of habitual thinking. Is this idea of wanting complete certainty? I've heard it from some people this week discussing whether we should return to campus. So, well, I don't know. I want to know that it's definitely safe, complete certainty, that we know of all the possible risks. And also, we have perfect plans to deal with all these risks so that there will be no risk. Then I can go back to campus, and then I feel okay to go back to campus. Right. So when you hear this voice out loud, you can see that means we will never leave our house if this is our condition for being able to venture out of our home. And when we really hear ourselves think those thoughts, I want certainty. I want 100% certainty that it's going to be safe, that we have a perfect plan to control and eliminate all the risks. No one can do that, actually. But we want that. That's what I want. We resist reality. Every moment we resist reality, suffering. Suffering. And this resistance shows up as intention in the body and mind, and block us from seeing the absurdity of these thoughts. And we think we're really reasonable, and I want everyone to be doing whatever it is that they need to do to make that happen. And this way of thinking is seeking, that is this kind of seeking that is perpetuating the erroneous belief that there can be lasting security that Pema Chodron was talking about. Even though conceptually someone can say that there is no, you know, absolute safety, but like we believe it can be had. That's why we're still looking for it. And so we're perpetuating this view. So it is not a rational thought. Even though we conceptually understand it, we at the emotive level, we still believe it. That's why she used the word believe. We still believe it. And that's what we can do in our practice, is to cultivate this awareness of how this belief shows up in our body and mind. And this sort of reminds me of an exercise I did a few months ago when I was practicing with this book to prepare for death. And one of the exercises that the author recommended was to go about a day in our life to identify all the different ways I can die in that day. I recommend it. It's a very interesting exercise. And what you can realize very quickly is how fragile life is. And it teaches us not to take this moment for granted, as some of you had mentioned. Next breath is not guaranteed. Just some part of our body need to stop working properly for a moment, and it can all fall apart. And recognizing that, then we will notice, well, you know, all I can do is to do what we can to reduce the risk, knowing that there's no way I can actually know all of it. So every day I go out and drive to work, after driving out to work and driving out home, and Well, driving on the road is one of the most dangerous thing to do. That's one of the top cause of death. And so, what can I do? Drive more carefully. Don't talk on the phone while I'm driving. I don't do that. Pay attention. Drive defensively. That's the best I can do. But I can't stop other people from running into my car. I can't stop other people from driving recklessly. That risk is always there. And try to keep healthy, do some exercise. But a lot of people do everything and they still get whatever they get. There's no way to control all the risk. To cultivate this awareness, and the same thing in this situation we're in, we can only do our best to, for example, these healthcare officials recommended wearing masks really is to protect others from our germs, and to keep a safe distance from others. And really, the most important thing is hand hygiene, and really pay attention to what you're doing with your hands, all this. So that's what you can do. But there's always, we don't know what might happen. And of course, it is also possible to die of something other than COVID nowadays, and it's always there. So here is, while we recognize what we can do within our ability, so it's not to just become reckless, but to also do what she said, to give up hope that there is anywhere to hide. Because you know, even at home you can die. So some tree can just fall down in this thunderstorm and like break my house and kill me. So this idea that there's absolute safety, it's unsustainable when we allow ourselves to really question it. And that's which is what she was recommending to do. And also, another way you might notice this happening, showing up in your mind, this kind of a habit of thinking, believing, is to cultivate this awareness of our hope, or secretly wishing that we can find someone who can guarantee for us 100% safety. That's why we get so frustrated. Like, there's no, like, I don't know, governor, president, I don't know, mayor, someone who just like do something, who can just like, and then say, now you're safe, 100%, I guarantee it. Or some doctor can come and tell you, like, if you just do these 10 things, then you're good to go, 100% foolproof. We're looking for that. This is this habit of looking for some outside person, outside being to be our savior, to take responsibility of our safety. And of course, if anyone turn up, be it a religious teacher or a politician or a doctor or business, that claiming that they can guarantee you 100% safety, you probably need to be a little bit more skeptical about it. So Pema Chodron talked about this as our inclination to abdicate our responsibilities. We want to give this responsibility to someone else, to find a savior who is supposed to save us, to give us absolute safety. And also, when they fail, we can blame them for our pain. Because we still don't want to take full responsibility for all the risk of being alive. So, a long time ago, I remember reading about, so like, really, it's about growing up, for us to grow up and take full responsibility full responsibility for our situation, this human condition we're in. So when we become more aware of these habitual ways of thinking, then we have the opportunity to question what she talked about, sort of like to question the validity of these beliefs. Remember I mentioned they are invisible because they're so habitual. We don't even see them. When we become aware of them, you might think that you might have the habit of thinking, oh, I can't believe I think that that's so dumb. I hate these thinking. I hate this belief. Then you have missed the point. Not only have you just created more suffering by hating your thoughts, but you have missed the opportunity. You can use this as an opportunity to look at the holes in these beliefs, to question the validity of these beliefs, and then you will begin to see these beliefs or urges to achieve absolute safety or certainty or perfect plans are really absurd. And the more you see that, she talked about the more you try, the more you will begin to realize that you get fed up because it's hopeless. Hopeless means like you realize how futile it is. And then that is the beginning of the beginning that she talks about. You're beginning to see, you give up trying. You give up trying to grasp for absolute security. And when you see that, congratulations. That's the moment you can see, you can relax into the uncertainty and ambiguity of the emerging present moment. Like I said in the guided meditation, moment after moment, just being here in this emerging present moment. And that is when you're not perpetuating your habit of suffering. Now, of course, does it mean that we become reckless and not behave responsibly for ourselves and others? Right? I hope you can see that's not what I'm advocating here. Right? When we are not so busy trying to grasp for absolute safety and certainty, what we can do as we relax into the emerging present moment, we actually can see clearly what is right here, right now, what is actually happening in the present moment situation. And we may realize that what we felt was appropriate or necessity maybe 2 months ago need to be re-examined, and maybe some adjustments made. And this can only happen if we allow ourselves to see the present moment situation clearly, so that we have an opportunity to notice the strategy to cope with the situation we have come up with 2 months ago may be outdated and no longer appropriate and need adjustment. We might also be able to notice that the outside situation has changed. 2 months ago, no one knew knew very well how the disease was transmitted. There was no treatment at all. And just this week, I've heard a number of treatments that's been found, and we have much better understanding of how the disease is transmitted. Of course, many people who were infected and have been transmitting it because it's invisible have recovered, or they have been treated. And also the period of isolation meant there's been fewer opportunities for transmission. Things have changed a lot. I'm not saying that we are 100% safe. That's not what we're saying here. But causes and conditions had changed a lot. So this is the opportunity for us to practice, remembering that every moment is a new moment. As a practitioner, then they allow us to be open, to be ready, to let go of old way of dealing with this situation. We call this pandemic like it's as if it's a fixed thing, when every day is developing, is evolving, so that we can discern for ourselves, based on our own causes and conditions, what is appropriate to do now, today, based on what we know. We may need adjustment tomorrow, next week, next month. So give up the idea that I got it sorted out and this is what I'm going to do forever. So the burden and weight of trying to figure out how to live with this virus, this coronavirus, for the rest of time can be lifted. It's like every moment that we will know something different and we will adjust and we will know what to do if we allow our mind to be open and clear. So